Hey, everybody. Welcome to Therapy Rocks, a personal growth podcast. I'm your host, Signa Darpinian, co-author of No Way and Raising Body Positive Teens, both with Jessica Kingsley Publishers in London. Today, we're covering part two of the three-part menopause series, navigating the physical aspects of menopause, such as hormone therapy considerations, body changes, and sex in midlife and beyond with Dr. Amy Vodish. Dr. Vodish attended Mayo Medical School and completed her residency in obstetrics and gynecology at Kaiser Permanente Santa Clara and a fellowship in family planning at Stanford School of Medicine. She has a master's in epidemiology and clinical science research from Stanford as well. Dr. Vodish is passionate about providing comprehensive reproductive health care to all women at any stage in their lives. She specializes in contraception, family planning, and menopause, and is a certified practitioner of the Menopause Society. She has a particular interest in international health care and serves as a consultant through the Stanford Program for International Reproductive Education and Services. Dr. Vodish is also a member of the Bay Area Leadership Council and the International Women's Health Coalition. Dr. Vodish, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so fun to be here.
I'm so excited to have this conversation with you today. And we heard about the stages of the menopause in our part one episode. But today, I thought it might be good to start out with you telling us what's happening in the body during this transition.
Yeah, it's a great question because I have so many patients coming in and they basically just say to me, what is happening? Like, I feel like I've gone insane. I feel like my body is no longer my own and I have no control over what's happening. And it's really can be, you know, really upsetting for patients because they don't really understand what's happening. So the one thing I like to start with is to say that this is a normal process. This is supposed to happen. And for every person who experiences this transition, they have different symptoms. So some people have very few symptoms and some people have a lot of symptoms. But physiologically, what's going on is the same for every person who's going through this. So, and physiologically, basically what's happening is I liken it, I call it a second puberty. Okay. So if you think back to when we were teenagers and everything's just all over the place. Our hormones are all over the place, and it's just a really bumpy ride. And this is your second puberty. So you're going from having normal, predictable cycles. For the majority of people, they have a pretty predictable cycle. And through that cycle, which is typically 28 days long, but can vary, there's a very set pattern of how your hormones ebb and flow through that time. And then what's happening as we transition from having these normal predictable cycles is we then transition to eventually having no cycles, which means our ovaries are no longer producing eggs. We're no longer able to get pregnant. But that transition time from normal predictable cycles to no cycles is a time of great transition. And we call that the menopause transition. Okay. And we can also call it perimenopause. They're slightly different, but they're relatively similar timeframes. And so what's happening as our body is going through this second puberty is there are massive hormonal fluctuations. And our ovaries are basically kind of starting to peter out. They're getting ready to hibernate. They're like, listen, I've done all the work. I've been working for 30 or 40. I am tired. I am done. I'm taking a nap. And it's, you know, so they're exhausted, but they're kind of sputtering. It's like the car that's like running out of gas and it has like the, it goes forward and it comes back and you're like, oh, it's coming to life. And oh, okay, no, never mind. It's, you know, this is what our ovaries are doing. So during this time, the hormone production from our ovaries is extremely unpredictable. So it can be really, we can have super high levels of estrogen. We can have really low levels of estrogen. In general, there's an overall trend of sort of less estrogen to the point where we get to when our ovaries are no longer ovulating at all and they're no longer really making a lot of estrogen. So we go from having sort of very predictable estrogen cycles before. And then during this transition, the estrogen levels are fluctuating all over the place to eventually we go to having very low estrogen levels. And so that's kind of physiologically what's happening. And this time of transition for some people is only a few years, and for other people can be a decade. So it can be very long, which is why a lot of patients in their 40s will say, I just feel like I'm just insane because it's just all over the place and is very unpredictable.
Can there also be heavier bleeding? I mean, the symptoms, like you said, are different for everybody, but...
Yeah, so the sort of hallmark symptoms of menopause that people talk about most are one, irregular bleeding, and then two, what we call vasomotor symptoms. So we'll get into kind of all the other symptoms that happen as well. But the irregular bleeding patterns are really hallmark for this time, and I call it wackadoodle bleeding. I'm like, it's just wacky.
Okay.
So they might come closer together. They may start to space out. They may, so you may be like, I always had 28 day cycles and now I'm having two periods a month. And then the periods can be lighter. They can be heavier. I've had women say it looks like a murder scene in their house. They're like, what is going on? And it's a time of, like I say, a second puberty where we all remember being in gym class or math class and bleeding through our pads. Yeah. And now they're like, I'm 47 years old or I'm 52 years old and I'm having to tie my sweatshirt around my pants to get out of the store because I don't know what happened. And so it's very common.
When it's starting to look like a murder scene for quite a while, is there anything that you would quote unquote do about that?
Yeah, so I definitely, even though wackadoodle bleeding often can be related to these sort of hormonal changes that we're going through, I always encourage patients to definitely talk to their physicians because we start to worry about bleeding if it's really heavy or you're bleeding more frequently. And so it may be normal and it might be that we do a workup and we say, nope, this is just your normal hormones. But I really do want people to know that if you are having bleeding like that, we want to know about it because we want to make sure there isn't something else going on. But in terms of what we can do about it, there's quite a bit we can do about it. For some people, everyone's very different with their comfort level of what they want to do, but we do have therapy options to kind of help people so you're not in the middle of the grocery store having to tie your sweatshirt around your waist.
If all of the workup was done and it is related to the menopause transition and everything looks normative there, is that when you might prescribe a contraception or hormone therapy?
It depends. So oftentimes, if the bleeding is really heavy, we'll often have to do maybe more than just typical hormone therapy. And there's various formulations of how we can pair different things together. A big driver for a lot of our menopausal symptoms is related to this fluctuating estrogen. And so the estrogen is often what we'll do to kind of help with those symptoms. But with irregular bleeding, sometimes that's where the progesterone component has to come in. And so we may play around a little bit with what type of progesterone therapy you get, depending on, you know, what your goals are and what everyone's comfort level is and things like that.
What if somebody who's going through the menopause transition is already on birth control? How would they know they're entering into the transition?
That is a great question. So I'm going to start to get a little nerdy here because I love this. I just love this stuff.
Nerd out. Me too.
I could talk hormones all day long. So for some women, birth control pills may mask their symptoms. So they may not even know that this is happening. And birth control is great for a lot of reasons. So even though we're going through the perimenopausal transition, until you have what we call your final menstrual period and your ovaries are really no longer making any eggs, you can still get pregnant. So if you don't want to have an unplanned pregnancy, you should be on some kind of contraception. And I like to tell people, just like with our teenagers, this time is when women are at the greatest risk of having an unplanned pregnancy because they don't think they can get pregnant. Mm. They're like, that's behind me. I'm all done with that. So it's our teenagers and our ladies in their mid to late 40s and early 50s where they're like, what in the heck? Are you kidding me? So, which is always an interesting conversation. So that's one thing. I do encourage people to be on contraception. There's a lot of different options. It's not really the point of this podcast, but, you know, there are a lot of things that we can do. So if you're on a birth control pill, you may not know that you're going through menopause. You may have no symptoms whatsoever. But the average age of menopause is around age 51 or 52. So if you're in your early 50s and you're on birth control, you're probably right around that time that this is happening. So what are some signs if you're on a birth control pill, for example, that might signal to you that you could be in menopause? So the estrogen that's in birth control pills typically is called ethinyl estradiol. The estrogen that our ovaries make is estradiol. So ethinyl estradiol is very similar, but it's different. And so it works at the estrogen receptors, but it works there a little bit differently. So even though you're on a birth control pill, you may still be having some menopausal symptoms because it doesn't work quite the same way. And so some of those symptoms you might notice are, I'm starting to have hot flashes and night sweats. I'm starting to have a little moodiness or a lot of moodiness or a lot of irritability. I may start to have the joint pain, kind of those other body symptoms that people have noticed. And then you may find for women who are on a traditional pattern with their birth control pills, where they take the active pills for 3 weeks and they do a placebo week for that last week, where they're not taking any active medication, they may find like, oh, during that week where I'm not taking the pill, I really have a lot of symptoms.
I see. I was forgetting about the placebo week.
Yeah. So that placebo week can sometimes, or they're like, wow, you know, I have this placebo week and I always used to have a period, but now I'm not having a period at all. And it might be because at that point, they're just, everything is, because even when you're on birth control pills, there's still some background hormone signaling that's happening. But once that starts to just really quiet down, it may be that they're like, oh, yeah, nope, I'm not having any withdrawal bleeding. You may still have one. So that might not necessarily be a signal, but for some people it can be.
I feel like I should know that the second part of the contraception question, but I'll just go ahead and ask it anyway, since it's not my scope of practice. That was birth control when birth control is being used for contraception, but what about other kinds of birth control, like an IUD, for example?
So IUD, I love IUDs, huge fan. They do a great job with masking the wonky bleeding, especially if you're on a hormonal IUD. The bleeding may not become an issue, but even with the IUD, you may, because there's no estrogen component in it. Same thing with the Nexplanon, which is the implant in the arm, or progesterone-only pills, there's no estrogen in those. And so you may still, again, with those patients, they may start to have some of those menopausal symptoms even on top of that. They may not have the irregular bleeding, but they may start to have kind of those other menopausal symptoms that come out.
Okay, and I just didn't know I had so many contraception questions, but I think this is my last one. What if somebody is on, say, like the IUD to stop the heavy bleeding in their early 50s? Like, at what point would you go off the IUD? And what happens when you go off?
Okay, great question. So it can be that if you take the IUD out, you're like, oh, I don't need birth control anymore. I've confirmed I'm in menopause. And there are ways that even when you're on a birth control method, we can do some testing to kind of see, get an idea of what's happening. But you may take the IUD out and start to have really wonky bleeding. You may take the IUD out and you would have the really wonky bleeding if you weren't all the way through that transition yet. Or you may take it out and have no bleeding. But one of my sort of favorite methods for doing hormone therapy is to combine an IUD with estrogen. And so you can use the IUD as sort of part of your hormone therapy combination. And it works great because one of the downsides of estrogen is that it can stimulate the lining of the uterus to grow. And so the progesterone component is really helpful to counterbalance that impact of the estrogen on the uterus. And so an IUD works great for that. So it's like you can do your, so you can do your estrogen as a totally separate product, go up and down in the dose as patients need, but you've got that IUD there and it does a great job for contraception and controlling bleeding on hormone replacement therapy and protecting your uterus when you're on estrogen. So I really love it. It's a great combo.
Okay, I see. And then your patients that might be using the IUD in that particular way would be navigating with you when they no longer need the IUD.
Right, exactly. And some of my patients will choose to continue to use the IUD long after needing contraception because it works so well to counterbalance the estrogen as part of their hormone replacement therapy or hormone therapy that they're doing. So some I have some patients in their 60s and 70s who still use it because it's so great for that. But, you know, kind of depending. So really, it's very personal dependent. There's a lot of different ways you can do it. Just as each person is an individual, my hormone therapy combinations are unique for every patient that I have. And there's just a variety of different ways that you can do it. And it's really important to work with your patient to find what's going to work best for them.
Okay. I did notice that 51 or 52 is the most common age to have menopause. But when we say 51 or 52 having menopause, do we mean it's the common age to be post-menopause? Or is it the most common age to be entering into the menopause transition?
The former. So great question. So 51 or 52, generally, you know, kind of depending on the study you look at, is when the final menstrual period is. The final menstrual period, of course, is a retrospective diagnosis because you don't know it's your final one until you go a full 12 months of no bleeding. But with that final menstrual period, usually is around age 51 or 52. The menopause transition or perimenopause. So perimenopause is the beginning of the menopause transition all the way through until you are 1 year after your final menstrual period.
The FMP. And that can
the FMP.
The FMP.
So, yeah. So the FMP for many women is their MVP, right? They're like, thank goodness I'm all done with that. So perimenopause can start at any time in your 40s. So it can happen for some people. They're like, well, great. I'm 45. I have 6 or 7 years of this. Yay for me.
Yay. You know? Okay. Thank you for that clarification. I know a lot of people are wondering what we can expect when we're expecting menopause as it relates to the body changes.
Oh yeah. These are big. So, there are estrogen. I like to say there's estrogen receptors throughout our entire body, from the top of our head to the tips of our toes. And if you think about it, with all of these estrogen level fluctuations, as well as the, just overall lowering levels of estrogen, these different body systems are all impacted. So I'm going to talk about the hallmark ones, but it's interesting when I look at my practice, these aren't always the ones that bring women into my office. Okay. But the two hallmark ones that people talk about the most are the irregular bleeding, which you and I have kind of already touched on, and then the vasomotor symptoms. And the way I describe these, so when I say vasomotor symptoms, I mean hot flashes and night sweats, which night sweats are just hot flashes, but at night. So it's basically, I call it your HVAC system in the middle of your brain. And your HVAC system, basically your thermostat, your Nest, if you will. Not that I'm not an owner of Nest, so there's no plug for a product there. But so with this HVAC system, it's controlled by estrogen receptors. And when we don't have estrogen there, it goes completely bananas. It goes haywire. And so what's really helpful with hormone therapy is that it calms that center down. But it's basically like somebody is flipping on the heat, flipping off the heat, flipping on the heat. And you're just like, it's like a furnace blasting. And that's basically what's happening is the furnace in your brain's going bananas. So that's one of the biggest ones that we see. And then the other ones that I see people coming in to talk to me about are sleep. So the either difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep, the waking up at 2 or 3 in the morning with your mind racing. And you're like, I'm not particularly stressed. Why is this happening? You know? And so even outside of the night sweats that might be waking you up and disrupting your sleep, the quality of your sleep is also not great. So the amount of sleep we're getting, the quality of the sleep we're getting is huge. And that's, again, because of these estrogen receptors in our brain. And then other ones, the other big one that I have patients coming to talk to me about is weight gain. Okay. And that's the big one. So women will come in, they're like, and this is the direct quote I hear multiple times a day is, I've changed absolutely nothing and I've gained 10 pounds. And most of it is in the middle. So this is a time where our body likes to redistribute our fat. It likes to put our fat around our fat cells around our midsection. So this is just sort of a physiologic change that happens that unfortunately, you know, society has a lot of opinions about. But honestly, physiologically, this is what's going on. There's a redistribution in our body. We're entering into a different phase. And so the weight gain, the sleep, hot flashes, night sweats, the irregular bleeding. Those are big. And then the other ones that I see patients come in for are mood changes. So mood irritability. They're like, I cannot handle anybody's nonsense anymore. Like our ability to deal with other people's, you know, BS, so to speak, is at like a zero. You're like, I'm all done. I'm all done playing nice. Everybody irritates me. So either super irritable or a big onset of anxiety and depression. And in particular, patients who have a history of anxiety and depression that may have been well controlled for years. They're like, wow, it's all of a sudden just, you know, it's as if I'm not on any medication, or it's as if I'm not doing all of the things that I know to do to kind of help myself through that. And those are huge as well. Other ones that patients will come in, we'll talk about joint pain. This is a time of frozen shoulder. It's big. You start to think you have it. You have arthritis, right?
Yes. Thank you for saying that, because this is exactly what I said about a year ago. I'm like, what is happening with the joint pain? And I described it to my OBGYN as like, the only way I could describe it is it felt like I had arthritis. And unfortunately, I notice a little bit of medical gaslighting, because I got referred to physical therapy for my joint pain when I had talked about hormone therapy. And I thought that was sort of an interesting choice.
I mean, that's really unfortunate. And
yeah.
It's a lack of, and it really comes from a lack of, I think, understanding and education. I could go on and on about the WHI study forever, and we may touch on it later in the podcast, but I think one of the disservices of that study is that people really became afraid of menopause, mm-hmm. and they didn't want to talk about it. And so women have been undertreated, patients have been undertreated for decades. But joint pain is huge. But right, you're like, I'm getting referred to a PT when there's actually a physiologic reason why this is happening.
Right. Yeah. It's just been so interesting. This is probably the first series of podcasts where I really had to sort of almost interview myself to think of the questions, because it's really hard to get the answers depending on who you go to. Dr. Vodish, I want to circle back to the belly fat, because we live in a culture where it's really hard to have a body. And I think it might be helpful for listeners to hear about why there's that redistribution of the weight around the belly.
Yeah, I think it's helpful, right? Because often it's the thing that's so distressing for patients. And it's really heartbreaking because you're like, it's the pressure that society puts on women. I mean, we could talk about this all day long, right? And you're in your 40s and your 50s, and it's like you become invisible. You're like, what is happening here? And it's just the emphasis that we put on this. But basically what's happening is, because our ovaries are not making estrogen, we need to get estrogen from other places. And a place that we can get that is from our fat cells. That's one of the places that makes a slightly different type of estrogen than what's the normal estrogen that our ovaries make during menopause, during premenopause, during our regular productive years. But it's still an estrogen nonetheless. And so it's an estrogen, as I've said, there's estrogen receptors everywhere. And it's so important for all of our different body systems to run, in particular, also sort of cardioprotection, to make sure that our heart's running well. And so that estrogen that's coming from these new fat cells is kind of what's helping to run, to kind of grease the wheels, so to speak, and to kind of help these different body systems work. So physiologically, our body's just trying to help us. But it's just hard because, yeah, but society isn't along for this ride. And so it's time to re-educate society on what women's bodies are supposed to look like.
Oh,
and what's
I love
normal.
That. Thank you for that. And I've heard this before. It didn't come from me, but somebody in my particular field reframed it. She did this reframe from a spare tire to a life preserver. Isn't that nice?
Yes.
Isn't that nice?
I love that.
Yes,
I love
a life preserver.
Because that's what it feels like, right? Everyone's like, I feel like I'm wearing an inner tube. And you're like, you know what? I love that reframe. I think that's amazing.
Yeah. Isn't that a good one? Okay. Yeah. So Dr. Vodish, our Therapy Rocks listeners definitely want awareness around changes to expect in their sex life in midlife and beyond. What do you have to say about this?
That is a big one. So I sort of look at it, and this might be very simplest, you know, very simplistic. And I, you know, the way I look at it is sort of twofold. There's our sexual desire, and then there's sort of physically, sort of the physical act of sexual activity. And so I'm going to address the latter first because that's slightly easier. So what is happening? This, again, it's all back to this estrogen. So the estrogen levels go down and it causes architectural changes in the tissue of the vulva and the vagina. And essentially, the lack of estrogen causes our collagen levels to go down, the elastin levels to go down, and the blood vessels to sort of shrink, so to speak. And so the tissue becomes thinner, it's not as elastic, and it can't lubricate itself as well. And so that's why for some people, they start to have vaginal dryness, symptoms of vaginitis, where they'll come in and say, I feel like I have a yeast infection. If you might, I mean, it's possible we can get yeast infections at any age, but if I have a patient who's perimenopausal or menopausal who feels like they have a yeast infection, I want to see them in my office rather than having them take the over-the-counter Monistat because we need to make sure that that's really what's going on because the symptoms can be similar. And then it can also lead to pain with intercourse. So you might have dryness, a lack of lubrication, pain with intercourse, or sort of these vaginitis or irritative vulvar vaginal symptoms. The great thing is this can very easily, that part can very easily be treated with prescription medications. So really vaginal estradiol can be fantastic for that. And the nice thing about vaginal estradiol is there are very few contraindications to using it, and it does not increase your risk of any, there's no slight increased risk of cancers with that. So it's something that even women who have a history of breast cancer may be candidates for. So it's great to have that. And then, so kind of a combination to sort of address those physical symptoms are vaginal estrogen. There are a few other prescription therapies as well. And then I will sometimes prescribe pelvic floor physical therapy to sort of retrain that pelvic tissue to be more receptive to sexual activity.
Okay. And as far as the desire piece?
Oh, the desire piece. Yes. So that is huge. Libido is tough. Libido is very multifactorial. There absolutely can be a shift in it with menopause and the menopause transition. And so sometimes going on hormone therapy can be helpful for that. Sometimes for some women, they're like, that's all I needed. I'm sleeping great. I'm not irritable and moody anymore. And just sometimes that hormone therapy can really help with that libido. The other sort of challenging part is for women, like I said, libido is so multifactorial and has very much an emotional and psychological component for us. So it's not just the physical desire, it's what's going on mentally and emotionally. And how do you address that? And how do we reframe it? I mean, there's some great books out there, but I really feel like patients in their 40s and their 50s are this sandwich generation. Oftentimes we're dealing with kids, we're dealing with the job, we're dealing with a partner we've had forever. And you're like, oh God, really? Am I still with you? All right. They're still here. You're like, all right.
I was thinking that, but I didn't want to say it.
You don't want to say it, but you know, I mean, I'm just telling you the conversations I have and you're like, listen, they're great. But like, you know, but also, and then you're dealing with your parents. So, yes. You know, so there's just so much pressure and that for many patients, it feels like one more to do, one more person who's asking them to do one more thing, and they're already giving so much of themselves to their job, to their kids, to their parents, and then to their partner. And you're just like, I just want to get in my PJs. I want to read my book and I want to go to bed, you know, like, it, so it's just, it's also sort of reframing that. And one of my favorite books, you know, not to plug other people's products, but I really love the book, A Tired Woman's Guide to Passionate Sex. Cause we're just so exhausted. Like we're exhausted.
Nice. What a great
title. And then
title.
You want me to add this on it? Yeah, it's a great title.
Yeah.
So it's tough and it is challenging and it takes some work. And so I tell patients, it's very common to feel this way. It's absolutely normal, but you have to really think about how much it will take some work to get it back.
Okay.
It takes work on your partner's side. It takes work on your side. And some women are like, listen, I got enough on my plate. This is low on my priority. And for other patients, it's really important because it's really important to their relationship. It's important to their relationship with themselves and with their partner, for their family unit to run. The parents need to be connected, or their partnership needs to be really connected. So it's, you know, it does take some work, but I tell them all is not lost.
Thank you for that. It's a topic that I almost left out because it wasn't as much on my radar. But fortunately, I've been having these women group meetings and they reminded me, oh yeah, let's talk about that. Well, Dr. Vodish, thank you so much for covering off on all of those different physical aspects and for shedding a light on such a buried subject matter, and also for normalizing the body changes in midlife. And like you said, you know, especially in a society where youthfulness and young bodies are idolized, this is definitely a narrative that we need to be having more of. Thank you for joining us today for part two of the three-part menopause series for Therapy Rocks. Stay tuned for part three next month. And a reminder that you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.